Hi everyone, I'm Amber.
I'm Valerie.
And this is CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. Thanks for watching our show. This is our first episode and we hope you enjoy it.
So good luck to us.
We're actually doing this as cosplayers. We both do cosplay and this is for cosplayers. So if you have any other suggestions, we'll give contact information later in the show. I guess I will start with a little bit about myself.
Go for it.
I've actually been cosplaying since I was 14 years old. I actually started out cosplaying as Deedlit at my very first Project Akon. I didn't have very much experience sewing at that point, and I still don't have very much experience sewing now after many, many years. But I also did enjoy, as I started, cosplaying at Renaissance festivals. My mother actually made my first costume out of tapestry fabric. It was fantastic. I still have the costume in my closet somewhere. I definitely tend more towards Renaissance costuming myself and anime costuming. Although I also attend other conventions as a cosplayer. My favorite part of cosplaying is actually the sewing part. I find it really relaxing, so that is my background as a cosplayer.
Hey, did you say how long you were sewing?
That would give my age. I've been
cosplaying. We're both the same age. It's just not going to make a difference.
I've been sewing for 13 years now.
There you go. See, brave girl.
13 long years I have been sewing and cosplaying at the same time.
So I guess that means it's my turn now. So see, she's 27, I'm 27, so it's not that big of a deal.
Go for it.
I've only been cosplaying for about 3 years, but I've been sewing for, and I've actually counted this out today, I've been sewing for almost 20 years. If that shows my age, nothing else does. Yay!
Oh,
but I've only been cosplaying for 3 years, and actually this past year is when I first started competing in competitions. I'm 3 for 3 for really big awards. Got Best Masters, got Best Star Wars Costume from Lucasfilm Industries itself. That was awesome. And then Best Masters most recently at Anime Fest. I like doing a lot of gaming costumes as well as anime costumes. I'm fairly open-minded about the stuff I try to cosplay. My main goal is to make something new and different with each costume. So it's not always the same character in 20 different outfits. It's something new and exciting and different challenges, stuff like that. I think that's all I can think of.
See, she's the professional cosplayer. I'm the hobbyist cosplayer. I don't do this professionally. I'm not at that level yet. Unfortunately, I just don't have the time and the money. As we all know, cosplayers tend to be poor.
We're all poor, and our wallets and our bank accounts scream at us on a daily basis.
That is true, and we are working on that. But until then, we'll be attending some conventions as cosplayers, both as individuals and with podcasts.
Yep.
This year, I will be attending Mini-Acon, that is in February. I will also be attending AllCon, that is in Dallas, Texas, in March. I plan to attend Scarborough Fair this year. That is April to May. It ends on Memorial Day weekend. I also plan to attend Project Akon, of course. That is the big one this year. That is the first weekend in June this year.
And the last one at the Sheraton.
That is true. The last one at the Sheraton.
We're making it
year.
A big blast.
And lastly, I will also be attending A-Fest, or Anime Fest, in Dallas, Texas in September, and Texas Renaissance Festival in mid-October.
All right, and the ones that I will be attending, and some of these are going to overlap, so you'll see both of us. The most recent one I'll be attending will be NakaCon, and that's going to be in February. After that, it'll be AllCon and Anime Matsuri. I think Matsuri is in April, I believe. I think it is.
Pretty sure it is.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But I will be attending AllCon as well. And then after that, we have Fanime, which is in San Jose, California. That's going to be at the end of May. And then beginning of June, it'll be AllCon as well. My hope, and fingers crossed, I'm still waiting in line for the tickets on this, is going to be Comic-Con. I've been dying to go for like 10 years. And I'm finally at a good spot in line, but I might get to go this year.
You'll be lucky to.
Awesome. And then I know there's going to be Anime Fest, of course, and then hopefully stop and round it off with YoCon. I think that's all of them. But I know that if you guys ever want to see us or want to know what our convention list is, it'll be posted on our website, which is cospod.org, and on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/cospod. Really easy to find us.
At the moment, we both are planning on attending AllCon as a podcast, Project Akon as a podcast, and Anime Fest as a podcast. So you will see both of us there at some point, hopefully running around with our cameras, doing interviews, taking pictures, and filming all sorts of crazy antics with the cosplayers. And of course, we'll be in cosplay ourselves.
Of course. Can't miss us.
As a cosplay podcast, you have to be a cosplayer too. So I have a few questions for you
okay.
as a cosplayer to mm-hmm. let the audience get to know our host just a little bit better.
Yeah, we're going to do this kind of get to know the host thing. We're going to try to draw random questions for each other, so we'll see how well this goes.
That's true. Okay, first up, mm-hmm. as a cosplayer, since you haven't been doing this that long, mm-hmm. so far, what is your favorite aspect of being a cosplayer?
Ooh, that's a tricky one, because there's a lot of good fun aspects with this. Mm-hmm. Probably the most fun I have is just being able to meet other people who are also in costume, whether it be from the same series or from a different series, whatever the case may be. Just going up to them, striking a conversation, be like, how did you make that? That is always the one question that I love asking people and hearing their answers on how they explain how they make their costume. That's the most fun I have with it.
Do you have a favorite convention that you go to for this?
I don't. And that's the funny thing, is I've been going to conventions for maybe about 10 years, didn't cosplay until 3 years ago. And I've been to so many that I can't pinpoint a favorite one. If I go to Comic-Con, I'm sure that's going to be my favorite, though.
That's true. It's like asking somebody what your favorite child is, and that's almost impossible to name those. Fair enough. You said you like asking people how they make their costumes, mm-hmm. and one of the best parts is learning how they do it. Do you have a favorite technique that you currently know or that you would like to know?
My favorite technique that I actually have a DA how-to guide on how to do this, and it's going to be one of our CosPod segments, mm-hmm. is how to dye spandex. I seem to be the only person that knows how to dye spandex.
Dyeing fabric is a really useful thing.
It's a really useful thing to learn, but it's so hard with polyester and spandex fabrics in particular, and I figured out this really cool method on how to do it, and I've been doing it for maybe like 5 costumes now, and I love it to death. So that's probably my favorite technique.
I fully admit I don't know how to dye fabric, mm-hmm. but it's something I would love to know, so I look forward to that segment.
Definitely.
Now, do you actually have a favorite cosplayer that you follow, say, on DeviantArt?
My favorite would probably have to be Yaya Han, but I think she's an icon to everybody at this point, isn't she?
Fair enough. She is a fantastic cosplayer, has been doing it for a long time. Hopefully she'll be at Akon this year. I did see her there last year.
Yep.
I attended the makeup panel.
Yep.
Let's see, for a final question, here's a tougher one for you.
Okay.
Cosplay has both good and bad aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Name a frustrating aspect of
cosplay. Oh,
just one. Name something that frustrates you about cosplay.
Oh, goodness. Other than money.
Money
is probably the most obvious answer.
But that frustrates everybody.
Yeah, it does.
Something that frustrates you personally, whether it's about the actual act of performing in cosplay or making the cosplay.
Awesome. Yeah.
Or even obtaining like a really hard-to-find accessory for one of your cosplays.
Okay, this is probably going to be a very bizarre answer, but this is the only thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
I cosplay as villains really well. When I make good guy costumes, it takes me forever and a half to get them finished. I can be a villain and get a costume done in less than a month, bang it out, I'm good to go. Because a good guy, my most recent good guy costume took me 8 months to make. So there's my most frustrating aspect, is I can't play good guys.
Fair enough. It just means you were concentrating really hard on a costume.
True. There you go.
Nothing wrong with taking 8 months to finish a costume. I have done that.
I think we all have done that. If you're any serious cosplayer, you've probably spent years working on just one costume, because it's never perfect. It's never finished. It's never complete. You're always fine-tuning.
That is true.
All right, so I'm going to do my 5 questions now. My first one is, what is your favorite costume that you've made to date?
That's actually an easy one. My favorite costume is my Lena Inverse costume from the series Slayers, Citizen Anime. I love that costume to death, as long as I don't actually become Lena. That would be a horrible thing. I'm actually working on upgrading my costume this year, because I have this wonderful glowing prop that I've been using mm-hmm. that is getting a facelift. This is one of those costumes that takes 8 months to prep.
It's a really awesome glowing prop, too. We've got many pictures of it.
It is. But, yeah, Lena Inverse is my favorite costume.
Cool. And I'm actually making a Slayers costume this year, so that'll be awesome.
Group cosplay!
So that'll actually bring me to my next question. Have you done any group cosplay, or are you just a solo cosplayer?
Usually I'm a solo cosplayer. I have tried and tried to get groups, but since mm-hmm. I usually end up cosplaying old school cosplay, it's a little harder to find people who know the series.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time I have ever been able to get people to do a group was actually when we did the video game Xenosaga, where I managed to get a couple of my friends to cosplay from that series. A couple of years ago at Akon, I actually ended up having some friends do Slayers cosplay. We just weren't attending the convention as a group. We ended up splitting up during the convention, which does happen if you cosplay from the series. So I guess I wouldn't really count that one as much of a group since we didn't go around as one.
Okay.
But yeah, we've done both Santa Saga and Slayers.
There you go.
Hopefully I will be involved in a clamp group this year at ACON.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Crossing my fingers, we're supposed to have a clamp tea party.
Cool.
That should work this. that should be fun. So, crossing my fingers.
Okay. What is your most embarrassing moment in a costume?
I've had a few of those. Actually, I can think of one, and I'm a little embarrassed to say this, I admit, but when I started cosplaying as Umi Ryuzaki from Magic Knight Re-Earth, which is another anime, I had womanly curves, and Umi wears a bodysuit. Mm-hmm. She wears a leotard, essentially, that cuts off and shows all of your legs. And I was not very fit at the time. And so I ended up going around the convention wearing bike shorts. Black bike shorts that actually went down to about here on my legs to cover up my curves because I was so ashamed of my shape because I wasn't this slim little, you know, anime girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so bad when I saw the pictures afterward because my bike shorts have a little Nike logo on them in white thread.
Oh.
And the hem kept rolling out because I'd roll them up so I'd hide the logo and they kept rolling back out. And so in every one of the pictures, you'd see the Nike logo. So I was both embarrassed about my shape and the logo. The whole con, it was horrible. I fixed that this year. I actually redid the leotard, and as a cosplayer, I'm working out, trying really hard to keep my curves in check.
There you go. So then what is your most memorable convention experience after a bad one?
Actually, it was probably last year at ACON, and this was with my favorite costume, my Lena Inverse costume. And I stopped traffic on the skywalk with my bow as I was getting my weapon checked. I'm so sorry to security at ACON for last year. I did not mean to do that. I apologize sincerely. I know you're not supposed to take pictures on the skywalk, but it was so cool to have so many people stop and take my picture. It was so cool. That was my favorite.
Yay! I've done that before too. I know ACON security staff is so nice and they try so hard, but you can't help it.
It's one of the greatest parts of cosplay,
It is
really gratifying to have your ego stroked. And I admit, as a cosplayer, you do kind of do it a little for the attention.
You have to do it a little bit, even just a smidge.
Yeah. Even if it's just the recognition of, hey, I know you, you're from
Exactly.
You gotta have a little ego stroking.
And
a little goes a long way.
So then my final question is, what is your favorite material to work with? Whether it be fabric or crafting material or armor
really
material?
Really tough question.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say my favorite material to work with is probably moleskin, oddly enough. And I started working with that last year, and a little bit year before last, when I made Arwen's chase dress from the Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring.
Okay.
Normally the costume is made of suede. I found out as a cosplayer that suede is very expensive, especially in 8-yard quantities. So I ended up working with moleskin, and while my sewing machine hated it, I loved it when I wore it. And I still love it when I wear it, most comfortable fabric ever. A pajamas made of moleskin. That is my favorite fabric to work with, and probably my favorite material of all. So, there we go. Rest of the show. Hi, everyone. Today's material segment is going to be on something that as a cosplayer, I'm fairly certain you will eventually get to use, and that's craft foam. If you buy these in the store, sometimes they're called foamies, and sometimes they're also called fun foam. Usually you'll find them in the kids section. They have these nice colorful little labels on them. And they come in a couple of different thicknesses. This particular one is 2 millimeters thick. This particular one, the white, is 3 millimeters thick, and it will have the thickness right there on the label. And the thickest that you can usually buy it in retail stores, is 6 millimeters thick. And this is fairly thick, as you can see here on the side. I will hold all of these up together next to each other so you can actually see the difference in thickness. And as you can see there, the difference is pretty marked when you actually go from 3 millimeters to 6 millimeters. Fun foam is one of the most versatile things you can use in cosplay. You can use it for armor, for accessories, for all sorts of different things, including weapons, if you'd like to do that, because some conventions are getting a little bit more strict on their weapons policies. Usually, fun foam is used whenever you need something flexible, because that's its greatest strength. It's very flexible. It can be rolled into cylindrical shapes, like so. You can cut it using pretty much any cutting device you prefer. You can use scissors, you can use an X-Acto knife, you can use straight blade scissors. For the 6mm thick ones, you'll probably want to use an X-Acto knife when cutting because it can be a little difficult to get a clean edge with scissors just because it's so thick. When using fun foam for things that require a little bit more thickness or a little bit more rigidity, you can actually coat it with a couple of different substances. This is called gesso. This is usually used as a primer, especially if you need to paint the fun foam for any reason, because fun foam is, of course, porous, which means it's filled with a bunch of tiny holes that you have to cover up before you paint it. This is basically a goopy white substance. You can tell mine is a little bit dry, it hasn't been used in a while. So it looks like this. You can coat your fun foam with it, and if you use multiple layers, you can give it a little bit more structure. Gesso isn't generally used to make something rigid. It's mostly just used to make something smoother, and it can be used to give a little bit more in the way of body to your fun foam. And I have made a mess. If you want it harder, you can use something called hard coat Mod Podge. You've probably seen Mod Podge before in hobby stores. There's a few different kinds. This one happens to be the one that's supposed to make it hard. If you read the back, it says that it has to cure for 4 weeks, and it's supposed to be as hard as wood when you do it. I have actually tried using this on fun foam, and it does make it harder. It just doesn't exactly make it as hard as wood, unfortunately. But those are a couple of things that you can use to coat your fun foam if you would like to make it a little more rigid or to give it a little bit more structure when you're using it for things that require it, such as this. This is an example of something you can do with fun foam. These are the halves to an armored corset. This is for Athena from Saint Seiya. This comes in two halves. This is entirely made of fun foam. You can see on the back where I had to kind of piece it together. There is a seam there, unfortunately, and that is something you have to worry about when using fun foam, is that generally, unfortunately, the pieces themselves that they come in, the sheets, are fairly small. This is about the largest retail sheet you can get, and this is 11 by 17. The smaller 6mm sheets only come in half sizes. This is only half as large as the normal sheet. So unfortunately, if you want to use the thicker foam for something like this, you end up having to take the pieces and you have to glue them together on an edge, usually with hot glue, so that you get a full sheet. Unfortunately, that does mean you have a seam, but it can't really be helped. So that is something to think about. It's definitely something where you need to plan your seam if you're going to have one. But as you can see, this is pretty thick. This was using one thickness of 6mm foam and one thickness of the 3mm foam for a total of 9mm thick. I did coat it in gesso, and then you can spray paint it, as you can see. If you spray paint fun foam without coating it first, it can eat away the fun foam. It tends to be a rather messy process, so it's much easier to make sure that you prime it first. You can glue things to it if you prefer. You don't necessarily have to use glue that's meant for foam. You can use basically any type of normal crafting glue, including good old tacky glue, and you can just adhere it to the surface as you wish. Now this is, of course, an example of armor that you can use. People also use it as adornments on weapons. And this is entirely made of foam, at least the decoration part is here. This was made using 3mm fun foam. This is Umi Ryuzaki's sword from Magic Knight Rare Earth. And as you can see, it can be used to make pretty intricate designs. You can trace on it with pen to make certain effects if you'd like. You can glue it in layers, which if you can see sideways, this does actually have several layers to it. And that does give it a certain thickness on the sides, which is helpful if you're trying to make it somewhat rigid. When making foam weapons like this, it can be helpful to have a rigid core to start with, which is what the blade is made of. There is a difference between fun foam and foam board. They are not actually the same thing. This is foam board. It's hard, and it does not bend. It's very rigid. If I were to try and bend this, it would crack in the middle, which is something else you actually have to worry about. Foam board is rigid. Fun foam is, of course, not. So it's better to start with a rigid core if you're going to use it for weapons, and then put the fun foam over it to get the design that you would like. Fun foam will never actually get entirely rigid unless you use a substance on it that will make it entirely rigid. For example, fiberglass. You can fiberglass over fun foam as long as you coat it first. You can also use putties, such as Bondo. And you can also coat it in paper mache, if you would prefer. And you can cover it entirely in paper mache, and that will make it rigid as well. You can use paper clay if you don't actually want to get down and messy and make the paper mache yourself. But no matter what you use, only if you use something that becomes rigid itself will fun foam become rigid. Otherwise, no matter what you do to it, it will still retain some flexibility, which may be good or bad, depending on what you want to do with your end product. So that is a basic overview of fun foam. The sheets themselves are fairly inexpensive. You can purchase them at any major hobby store, such as Michael's, Joann's, Hobby Lobby. Some places may have entirely different mom-and-pop craft stores as well. They're usually about $1.29 to $2 a sheet for the large sheets. If you watch in your local ads, they usually go on sale, and they usually have a cycle, so it's good to watch for that. The other thing you can do with fun foam, if you want to get it in large quantity, is that they do sell it in rolls. This is a 60-inch roll. These are usually about $8 at your local hobby store. These are only sold in the 3mm thickness. You don't really have a choice with these, but it does give you a much larger area on which to work if you want to make something such as an armor-based, a breastplate, if you like, with fun foam. Bear in mind that, again, this is very thin, very flexible stuff, so if you do want to make armor with large pieces like this, you need to either layer it by gluing the layers together, or you need to coat it in something that will become rigid later. You can also use plaster, incidentally, strips of plaster, if you would like to make something rigid out of fun foam. I do not recommend that you use plaster strips on armor, simply because they become so rigid that you cannot move in it, and it will break. And after working so hard on something you've made out of fun foam, you definitely don't want to suddenly break it. And that's our overview of fun foam. Alright, so we're going to do our general wig maintenance now. This is where after you've worn your wig about 3 or 4 times, it's gotten kind of old and tangly, probably a little smelly and stinky. We're going to use this one. Yeah, this one is in dire need of some tender loving care, because my poor deprived wig needs detangling, washing, probably a host of other things. As I have not actually washed this wig, as you can see this giant mat, since I wore it. Or since it was back in the day when I didn't know you were supposed to wash wigs, or comb them, or do any of that stuff. But now I know, and now we're going to fix the problem.
We're going to do our best to fix this for her.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things that I do, especially when it comes to long wigs, is try to take out as many of the tangles as possible before I wash it. And this is what I use. I usually use a very wide tooth comb brush. Not the smaller ones, not the ones that have like 20 million prickles on them, because those are actually meant to pull the hair out. And we don't want to do that to the wig. We want to keep as many fibers in the wig as possible.
Of course, for those who don't know, wigs are made of a whole bunch of wefts in here. It's basically a little network of threads that are holding the hair on there. And they're not as strong as the human hair on the head. So if you brush too hard, you're actually going to pull these wefts out, and then you'll have a bald wig instead. And most people don't want to end up with a bald cap instead of a wig. So
unless that's the look you're going for, then the bald cap will be cheaper.
That's true. So I'll hand that to you.
All right. And this is how I typically do it. I start at the bottom first, and then I work my way up in just little itty-bitty segments. Mm-hmm. I find that I pull out the least amount of hair when I do that. And I'm probably going to do this kind of jaggy motion. It takes a little bit of time, I will not lie.
I've actually found sometimes that it may help you when you brush the hair to actually start brushing with the pick flat parallel to the hair first so that you're not digging into the fibers as much.
Right.
And then gradually work your way so that the pick is vertical and perpendicular to it so that then you're actually pulling into the hair. Sometimes it works, sometimes it's not. A lot of this is actually kind of an experimental process.
Mm-hmm. You have to find what method works best for you that pulls out the least amount of hair.
And it depends on the wig too, since wigs are actually made of a whole bunch of different types of fibers now.
The next part that I'm going to do, and this is what I always do, especially if it's a longer wig, I'll try to grasp and slowly, gently dent it into the tub head first, and then gradually push the rest of it in. Hopefully you guys can see that. I don't know. Can the magical camera see that?
I guess we will find out. not really, but that's okay. I can describe what we're seeing for the audience.
There
you would like to. But basically the entire wig right now is submerged. She put the back end of it in first, the long hair part of it in first, since she had it over her hand, and then basically dumped the rest of it in so that it's now completely submerged. The hair will spread out in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
That is okay.
It actually helps me get some of the tangles out, too.
You may lose some fibers in the bathtub.
That's okay, too.
That is also okay. Losing of the fibers is totally normal at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Like human hair, the nature of the fibers change when they are wet. And so you may end up losing a little bit of the bathtub. Just make sure you clean out your drain when you're done.
Yeah. Another thing that I also do, which you can't really see here, is I tend to flip it inside out, so that way you can get the top of the hair better submerged, and you can also wash the lace portion as well. Most people forget the lace portion needs to be washed too.
Mm-hmm. Especially since that part soaks up human sweat.
Yep. Now, there are a couple different types of shampoos that you can use, and we've mentioned this earlier. Try to go for the ones that have more natural products in this, and this is totally fine. I haven't used this one personally, but I've used variations of this, so this will work totally well.
Mm-hmm. This just happens to be the shampoo that I've used on wigs before that I found works well. This is the Organics line of shampoos that tend to use a little bit more natural ingredients, and so they work a little bit better on wigs.
Yeah. And you just want to start from the top and slowly and gradually work your way into it. It's almost like, it really is like washing a pet, a very, very long, hairy pet.
Although I think the wig is better behaved.
Yeah. Unlike my dogs, which would start jumping and barking at me if I tried to even consider doing this to them.
When you do this, you probably want to set out a few towels, as you see underneath us, for when you take out the wig, so that you don't get your entire bathroom floor wet. Safety first. And she's gently working her hands through the fibers of the hair, making sure to be gentle, especially if you get up toward the roots of the left. So
definitely. Especially since if you're using a longer wig like this one, it's okay to use a teeny little bit more shampoo and conditioner than you probably normally would. Because it is a lot of hair you got to work your way through.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with tangles, always be troublesome.
You can always wash out extra shampoo as well.
Oh, yeah. It's very easy to do so.
If for some reason your wig starts to lose dye in the bath water, that's not normal. You're not supposed to end up undyeing your wig in the bathroom tub.
Even with Sharpie dye wigs, if that starts happening, didn't set properly.
Just something to watch out for.
All right, my nose is going to kind of look like this one giant mat of purple hair and soap.
Much like human hair.
Yes.
In a lot of ways, wigs are like a collection of human hair. Just random colors.
Exactly. And surprisingly, you got a really good wig here because I've only pulled out one fiber and nothing is in the tub. That's when you know you have a good quality wig.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's a lot of very slow movement. I'm kind of doing this as a rubbing motion as I'm going through the wig, just so I can be gentle with it.
Is this something where you would use a brush while it is in water?
Sometimes I will, and it depends on how bad the wig is. Now, something like this, I can probably get it out okay with a detangler, mm-hmm. that I don't have to worry about using a brush.
Okay.
But if it's really, really tangled up, like one giant rat nest, then yeah, I'll bring the brush out in here.
All right, I'm going to go through with the ill conditioner.
With this lovely coconut milk scent.
So my wig will smell like tea tree oil and coconut.
Coconut milk.
Correction.
Yes.
Coconut milk. All right, so we have now rinsed the wig, which I know still looks a little matty and ratty, but trust me, it does get better once it dries out.
And then what I like to do to try to get some of that excess water is slowly and gently squeeze and pull it down.
And you're going from the top to the bottom.
Top to the bottom. Because going bottom to top really does nothing. I'm going to do this with my own hair, too, because I have such a long ass hair.
There we go.
We may wish to cut that word out.
Yep.
Got one little itty-bitty fiber here that's being a pain in the butt.
We are a family-friendly podcast.
Yes. All right. There we go.
And we are moving it over. Now, there's a couple things that you can do in terms of drying it. I prefer the air dry methods. I think it gives it more time to rest. And just something about blow drying it makes it more matted. And I hate the matted look when it comes to these wigs, because wigs are supposed to be, you know, peppy and full of life. You can stick it onto a wig head dummy, or as my gracious co-host says, we're going to use a giant Coke Zero bottle.
This is not product endorsement, incidentally. But what I'm going to do...
Yeah,
go ahead and put that towel down
on first.
This is such a long wig.
There we go.
And then ta-da!
Yep. I can bring this up a little bit.
Yes, please do so.
Right there. There you go.
So that it doesn't drip all over everything.
And then you let it sit and air dry, and it depends on the length of the wig and what kind of air is circulating through the room. You can also put like a small fan next to it.
Mm-hmm.
You get down here. Hi. You can also put a small fan next to it to help speed up the drying. But, you know, it really depends. If something like this, I'd imagine, probably takes between 4 to 5 hours to dry.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a shorter wig, it'll probably take no more than an hour or two. Another tip that I would suggest is as you're drying it, and I don't know if you all can see it. Can we tilt the camera this way? This is what I also do, is after the top portion has dried off a little bit, I will flip it inside out and give the lace a chance to dry as well.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it gets stinky.
That is true. You can grow mold on a wig.
You can get mold onto a wig.
Now, is this something where you would recommend, say, using a blow dryer to dry wigs?
You can use a blow dryer. If you use a blow dryer, you do want to use the coolest, lowest setting possible. I find if you use the high heat setting on it, it just causes massive frizzies to go up and all over the place. I'm not a big fan of the blow dryer. There you go.
Of course, most blow dryers have at least two settings, so make sure it's on the low setting.
Yeah.
You can use high speed if you want to, but make sure it says low heat.
Most of the blow dryers that you can get at beauty salons and supply stores will have a cool setting on it. You just hold down the cool setting and that will totally dry.
All right, so that was our segment for today.
Yep.
We hope you enjoyed, and thank you for downloading the show, of course.
We really appreciate everybody watching us. This is our very first show, and I know we're both really excited about it, so
I'm nervous.
But if you'd like to see more of our podcasts, there's a few places you can find us. We can start out with, of course, our main website, which is cosplot.org.
Mm-hmm.
We have our DeviantArt account, which is under Cosplot.
Yeah.
We have our Facebook page, which is also under Cosplot. We have a Twitter account that is under Cosplot Podcast. That's a special one, sorry.
Unfortunately, that Twitter name was taken. Also on Facebook, if you look for us, it will look a little funny because it will say Cosplot. It's two separate words.
It's spaced it for some unknown reason.
Yes. But you can still find us there. In any of those mediums, we have a fantastic website up right now so far.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any suggestions or recommendations, because I am a junior webmaster, please feel free to let us know. The next place you will see us very, very shortly is Mini Acon, and that is February 18th, 2012, and that is in Denton, Texas, where we will both possibly be cosplaying.
More than likely, it'll be really simple, since it is just a couple hours are going to be there, but we want to get to meet some new people, see some new cosplayers, see what they've got going on this year.
We'll be taking plenty of pictures, maybe doing a few interviews if we can find some cosplayers
who would like to be on the podcast,
and we will be doing plenty of recording while we're up there.
Of course.
Alright.
Can't think of anything else other than thank you so much again for downloading this, and we will see you next time.
Mm-hmm. If you'd like to email the show, if you have panel suggestions for our segments, or if you'd even like to contribute to our podcast, we are definitely looking for guests to contribute to the show, as well as volunteers to attend conventions that we can't always go to. You can always email us at podcast@cosplot.org and just put your subject as I would like to volunteer.
You can also do this on Facebook, you can do this through our Twitter account, you can do this through our DeviantArt account. We've got multiple avenues that you can contact us. We're always open to ideas and suggestions.
And we're very friendly people, I promise we will not bite your head off. So please feel free to contact us at any of those venues, and we will see you next podcast.
Have a good one, guys.
Bye.